every morning after worship, I have a few questions from persons who need clarification or have some questions, and I'm going to address some of them today, this morning, before we get started. One of them has to do with family finance. Well, if you're a volunteer and you have five children and you have two daughters at Southern, how in the world do you live? I actually have three daughters. One just got married. She was at Southern, and then one finished academy and moved in to replace her. But we made a deal with the Lord. If you'll take care of our kids' finances, we'll take care of your work. If they can't go to school, I'd be happy to go get a job. I have a master's degree in software engineering and one in business. I don't have a problem getting a job. But if you've called me to do your work, then you have to do your part. The first year, the girls corporated. They did very well here in the Southern Union. I understand the first daughter that went to corporate was number one in the union. And of course, Southern doubles all the corporate work. So it wasn't hard paying for the bill. The second year they went, my other daughter went to corporate, and she wasn't doing so well. She called home and said, "Daddy, I just can't do what my older sister Lena is doing." And Katrina said, "And I'm not hardly selling any books." And I told her, "Katrina, it's not even about making money. It's about reaching people. Don't even worry about the money. Even if you don't sell a single book, God's still going to pay for your tuition. So just let the pressure come off and just serve people. Meet their needs. Don't even worry about the money. In fact, the less books you sell, the bigger the miracle when you pay for your school bill." Her sales went vertical when she started focusing on people. So that year wasn't very hard to pay the tuition. And this year, with both girls finishing, one finishing nursing, another one just starting nursing, their schedule doesn't allow for them to be out courting in the summers because of that. But they work very hard, and with some tuition assistance a little bit, and also some loans that are made that you don't have to pay back if you're a missionary, the bills have been covered again. And I haven't had to put a single penny. My wife works as a part-time nurse. This year she moved back from Guyana. She said, "Even when I was down in the jungles with you, you spent so much time traveling, I was by myself, even down there." So we felt impressed that she should be here with the girls. So most of the year she spends here in Illinois and in Collegedale, back and forth between a part-time nursing job, and that keeps food on the table for them. Occasionally we get some donations that say for personal use only. Those are used to put food on the table as well. God has been very good. My wife spoke to the ladies yesterday, and she mentioned that we look forward sometimes to our tax returns to get something back. And I told her, I almost asked her there, but I decided to do it in private. And I said, how can you get the tax return when you never pay? You don't make enough to pay any taxes. She goes, "I didn't address that. I forgot." I said, "Yeah, we don't have to pay taxes because we don't make that much. So of course you got to pay Social Security. So how do we get money back? And there's something called earned income tax credit, where you get money back that you never paid. We love filling in our tax returns every year. And we're glad because my birthday happens to be April 15, so I should get something back. Anyway, we've appreciated what God has done, and we're always grateful that both girls attended Lorbrook Academy, and they got scholarships, and they took care of the girls while we were overseas. And God has done his part, and at Southern, Sister Meyer there in student finance said, "You take care of God's work. We'll take care of your girls." So I've been so grateful for the partnership that Southern has had, and of course with the student missionaries. Second question, who was your grandfather? I mentioned that he worked here in the Southern Union for a long time and just recently passed away. He was a pastor. Albert Dickerson, for those that knew him and worked with him, Albert and Marjorie Dickerson, they were listed on the last, Dr. Beats, on the alumni weekend. They were in the honor class, and that was just 2 days before he died. So I was glad to have them listed there. Finally, there was a question asked. Several have asked questions about this needs to go in print. These stories must go in print. And not all the stories are coming out in print, but Pacific Press, Eileen Landry, who's a well-known author for Adventist Pioneers, has written a book, and Pacific Press will be publishing it. It'll be coming out in January. It's called Mission Pilot. And that not only is a story of our life and what God has led, it's also a how-to manual to become a missionary today. So it's focused not just on telling what God has done, but how can you do it too? So I think that would be an exciting book for our young people. There's a lot of young people out there desperate to find a place to work today, but the financial structure that we work in today is quite different than it was 30 years ago. And how does a young person get into mission work today? You have to be thinking volunteer. Somebody with a lot of experience can get an overseas budget if you know people and if the need is right. But young people today who don't have any background or track record, I have a hard time breaking in sometimes, but there's plenty of work to do. The needs have not decreased, they've increased. So I believe in volunteerism. Some years ago, I went to work at the division office in Brazil, South American division, in Treasury for several weeks. We were working on some software development and for the Treasury Department down at the Inca Union. And after I was done, I took a tour of Brazil of several of the cities. I visited the large city of Belém on the Amazon River mouth. As I was walking down the street, I saw a large crowd of persons looking at something on the street. I heard a lady shout, "Oh, it's a lady's head on the sidewalk." Maybe it was morbid curiosity, but I wanted to see myself. So I went over, looked over their shoulders, and sure enough, on a pillow was a lady's head on the sidewalk. The strange thing about that head was, it had a pin in its mouth, and it was drawing a picture. Well, I was quite curious at that point. I waited till the crowd dispersed, and I saw what it was, and then I realized it was a lady. Had no arms, no legs, no shoulders, no hips, just a little basketball body. A head sitting on a little basketball body. How in the world the lungs and all the organs necessary for life could be crammed into that little tiny piece, I don't know. But there she was balanced on a pillow and had a shoebox in front of her, and she had a pen and she was drawing pictures on a little piece of paper on top of the shoebox. She looked at my feet a couple times. She couldn't look up because she'd probably fall off her pillow. And then I remember Jesus when they threw the lady in adultery at her feet. At his feet. He didn't look down at her. He immediately knelt down and looked her right in the eyes. So I felt embarrassed looking down at her, so I lay down on the sidewalk, and I'm sure she thought, "What is this gringo doing lying down here on the sidewalk?" But I was in my suit, I put my chin in my hands, and I looked at her right in the eyes, and I was only about, you know, a foot above the cement. And I started talking. She was one of the most joyful people I have ever met. Her name was Maria. She couldn't stop saying how good the Lord has been to her. She was 32 years old. Her brothers brought her every day and put her on her pillow. She painted her own pictures. She made her own living. People put money in her shoebox, and then they took her back home to eat and take care of her personal needs, and then they put her back on her pillow again. And this has been going on for years. She was just so joyful and how thankful she was. And I started to feel guilty. And I thought, we complain about so much, and this girl has nothing, and yet she's so thankful. She said, "Mr. David, if you will... Señor David, if you will put up a new piece of paper on my shoebox and come back in an hour, I'll paint a picture for you." So I clipped one on and I took a walk around, and when I came back, she had a picture waiting for me. This picture right here. A picture of this beautiful young lady she painted. And you can see through the back. Maria painted that for me, and I said, "Maria, that's a beautiful picture. Is that somebody you know, a family member?" She said, "No, that's me. That's the way God sees me. That's the way I'm going to be someday." We've already gotten to the teenage years where our self-esteem is pretty low, but sometimes we forget to look at ourselves the way God does. We have a lot to be thankful for. This picture is on the web, on our webpage, gamas.org, or on tagnet.org/GMA. And you can get a picture, you can print it yourself if you want to show it to your Sabbath school. The story, the head on the sidewalk. Maria taught me a lot. She's still living in Brazil. She lives in Manaus now. As you can imagine, everybody knows about Maria. She's a unique person. When she moves, they know that she moved, and they know who she is. In the early 1990s, I was just leaving the Inca Union. I came up to finish some graduate work, and I was headed down to work in the Caribbean Union in the early 90s. And you might recall, I'm sure you do recall, the experience with Waco. Do you remember that morning when National Public Radio announced that there was some relationship to the Seventh-day Adventist Church? Do you remember the knot in your stomach when you realize, how in the world can you correct that? Well, I realized, you're helpless. There's no way to really tell your side of the story. And I was walking down through Sears, and all of a sudden, I heard a familiar voice on TV. I looked around, and there my college pastor, Dr. Gordon Beetz, was being interviewed by a friend of mine, Stephen Roof. The truth about Waco. I sat there fascinated and relieved as somebody was able to tell the real side of the story to everybody who lived in Chattanooga area. And something seared in my mind at that moment, and it's never left me. The realization that if we're going to have the eye of the public, We have to put into place the structure before the crisis. We can't wait till the crisis to put up television stations, to put up satellites, or use them. We have to do it during a time of peace when everything is going well, so that when a crisis hits, we're already in place. And it's seared into my mind, and I've never forgotten, and I told the Lord, if I'm ever have an opportunity to be involved in broadcasting, I am not going to miss the opportunity. Years went by. I went down and taught at Caribbean Union College. I traveled throughout the Caribbean Union installing accounting systems, networks. I took some of my college students with me, and we would install, go to different conferences and different institutions, schools, and install networks and write accounting software, payroll software. Then it was time for permanent return. The conference administration invited me to visit the Davis Indians, and we decided to take 1 year as an experiment with the Lord and serve the church as volunteers for 1 year after all that they had done for all those years for us. Well, that 1 year turned into 5 years so far. We haven't been able to leave. And I told you some of that story earlier this week, how God has provided and how things grew. Well, the opportunity for broadcasting finally did come around as a strange realization of what God could do with aviation, the burden of how to reach people in the cities. Well, if we could reach everybody in the interior with medical aviation and education, what are you doing for the people in the cities? Well, not very much, Lord, but I don't want to live in a city. I don't want to work in a city. Yeah, but you could reach them with television. Why don't you apply for a television station license? Well, we went to the government. They'd been communist for 30 years, and they just opened the doors, but they weren't about to let a church have a TV station. We applied 3 times. We met with the Minister of Information. Every time it was no, no, no. Well, Lord, what am I supposed to do if we can't do it? He said, don't you remember the principle I was teaching you? The principle is, use what you have. But what do I have that I can use? Well, you have a set of Net 98 tapes, I mean, with Dwight Nelson. Why don't you just pay to put them on the air? Well, Lord, I can do that. At least we can do that. I mean, we can pay cash to put them on the air. So we negotiated a price, and I put the Net 98 on the air. We didn't tell anybody it was Seventh-day Adventist programming until it came time for Sabbath. But we gave away books. People were calling in, pastors from other churches, from the United Nations building. They were calling in and said, who is this guy? Which church is sponsoring it? And we wouldn't tell them. We'd just say, somebody from the U.S. is sponsoring it. And they asked for these books. And then a Sabbath hit. And then we started inviting everybody to come to their nearest Seventh-day Adventist church. People started showing up at all our churches. We had material left over from Net 98. But I had about 800 pounds of... I sent out an email asking for free material that was left over from Net 98, and I got about 800 pounds of leftover brochures and Bibles and so on. And we had all of it together with the conference. Every church got a big old box full of materials, and so when visitors started showing up, they started handing them Bibles and so on. One Pentecostal church invited one of our pastors to come present the Sabbath, and even though they're still Pentecostal, the majority of the church accepted the Sabbath. And many of them, the majority, worship on Sabbath. Then I got the news. One of our young pastors from the conference, a departmental, came to me and he said, David, I just baptized a lady, the wife of the owner of Channel 2 Television. She had been raised as a child as an Adventist, but she'd left the church. Her husband's not an Adventist. They know a little bit about it, but when they saw Net 98 on Channel 13, a competitor station, they watched it carefully, and she decided to become rebaptized. And she said, they asked, who in the world put that on TV? And they said, well, Elder Gates did it. Bring Elder Gates to our house. So the pastor and I went to visit his family. They had a very upper class family, well-to-do, had a beautiful porch. We sat on the porch and drank juice as we talked. The owner turned to me and said, my wife is an Adventist. I probably will be someday, but we want to ask you. We've been watching you closely, what you've been doing in the interior. We've been asking a lot of questions about you. What kind of proposal do you have for us? A proposal for you? I mean, I thought maybe you would have a proposal for me. I was kind of excited. I was thinking in my mind, they're going to give us some free airtime. He said, I do have a proposal for you. We know God gave us a station, and we believe it's for advancing His work. Would you be willing to take over the station, 50% ownership and total operating control of our station? And overnight, we began operating an Adventist television station there in town. It came to my mind, there's nothing that God can't do. If we will just use what's in our hands. We have buildings, we have assets, we have other things. They have to be put right on the front lines. You know, right now, the government, when you declare war, you don't build a new Pentagon building. Did you notice that they're not building a new Pentagon when it got wrecked, when that plane went in? They just repaired what they had it, and they put their money into tanks and warplanes. Our church has been called to a spiritual war. If you don't think you're at war, then you must realize you've been declared war upon. God's message with Harry Potter and all the worldliness and all the attack on God, on God's truth that's happening all around the world, you have been involved in a war that's not of your choosing. The moment we accepted Christ, we joined the army. And now we're called upon to make strategic decisions that will place our resources into the armaments that will accomplish the job. If we have to have a new office, we better build a new office because it's absolutely necessary. There is no choice except to expand in order to continue the work. But you better be sure that you've been using your other office to its maximum capacity before you spend in buildings. Churches, television, radio, satellite, those are the armaments that we use to reach people. Schools, training is a powerful method. You have to train. The soldiers went into training before they go out to the front lines. Strategic assets. I was at ASI meeting. I've been invited twice to be in charge of the devotionals for the youth, the teens, primary, at the last two ASI meetings in Michigan and in Sacramento, California. This last one really impressed me. It was like no other ASI meeting I'd been to. There was a certain vibration inside there, and everybody was saying the same thing. It wasn't even part of the motto. It wasn't even part of the theme. You know what I was hearing from all sides? It's time to go home. Everybody was saying it. The people you ate breakfast with, those who you sat with at a table, the ones you worked with, everybody rubbed shoulders. It's time to go home. It's time to get rid of all our assets and put them on the front lines. People with millionaires and those that didn't have anything, it's time to put everything on the front line. My wife told me, she says, I've never been to an ASI before that had so many joyful people. Well, it's not an accident. You want joy? Let go of everything you have. See what God does to multiply, and that is the most joyful experience you can have when you see God provide for you. Joy is not an accident, you know. You got to buy it. You got to buy it by giving up everything you're hanging on to. It's time to go home. Companies today, in order to be able to grow, have to recognize, keep their ear to the ground, and recognize the trends. You have to. You don't, you die. I'd like to point out several trends today that we need to be aware of. One is volunteerism. There is a trend toward volunteerism. It's not an accident that President Bush is calling the whole nation to be volunteers. Did you read that? It's not an accident. It's not just in the Adventist Church. Volunteerism is a trend, a basic grassroots level trend. People want to volunteer. They're standing in line, professionals. Right now, ADRA sends me a list of volunteers that they can't handle. They just forward them to Gates. And doctors, engineers, pilots, nurses, dentists, student missionaries are looking for places to go. There's a trend, volunteerism, and we must not miss that. One of the ladies who directs our Bible worker training is a 79-year-old retired lady physician that has served overseas for nearly 40 years. And she is a jewel, and she is doing a wonderful job. So our retired professionals have in their hands the capability, maturity, and experience to lead God's work and lead the younger people. Volunteerism. Must not miss it. Sacrifice and giving. Our members are beginning to give all. They're beginning to put everything on the line to finish the work. And we as leaders should be followers in that. Actually, we should be leaders, shouldn't we? We should have been the first ones. But you know what? When the leadership begins to be attuned to that and begins to do the same thing, there's an explosion. When leaders realize what's happening on the ground and they react in the same way, all of a sudden everybody realizes, hey, we're on the same wavelength and things happen. If you're short of cash in your budget, you haven't put enough money then into mission. If you're short of cash, it's you don't have enough money put in mission, because once you start pouring money on mission, the resources will start flowing your way. And again, I say it's not an accident that Southern doesn't know what to do with all their students. It's about focusing on mission. Examples of denominational pioneers. You look at that video from Pastor Jim Nix that he has from the White Estate, and you realize very soon that our pioneers, when they traveled, they didn't even think of buying a sleeping car accommodation. They travel sitting up so they could save a few cents. I mean, I've traveled in sleeping cars, and when I've traveled by train, you sleep much better, you wake up refreshed, and it's easy to justify it. Well, I'll be able to preach better, I'll think better, my mind's clear. They didn't even think of spending that much money to buy a little bit more accommodation. Something's wrong with me. Then we have the Inter-American Division, it's my home division right now where I live and work. Pastor Leto came over, and our division president, and invited me. He said, David, we're inaugurating a new mission in Venezuela. I would like to invite you because you had a big part in influencing that. And I said, I had a part in influencing that? He said, well, you came over to Venezuela and you preached everywhere in the central church of the Union administration, took you from church to church preaching. And then he said, somehow that philosophy that you have kind of stuck in, because next thing you know, the Union is saying, we now have a new Adventist mayor for that whole region. And we went to develop a whole new mission office focused just on indigenous peoples so that they can have their own administration, just focus on their needs. And it's, now that we have the proper opportunity with an Adventist mayor, the time is right, the golden moment is here. And we looked at their finances and we said, but the policy requires you to have 100% financing for all of your administrative staff, and you only have 25% financing. Yeah, but haven't you seen what God is doing for David Gates? If he moves forward, the money's just come. And Pastor Leto said, well, I couldn't fight that one. That's true, we all know that. So the division approved the new mission, even though they only had 25%. And a new administration doesn't have housing, they don't have an office, they don't have desks, they don't have telephones. They're all just cramming into a little tiny place. But they all believe so much that the time is ripe to open the mission. So I went there and I translated for the Union president for the dedication service. And I'll tell you what, the sermon he preached was right down the line. It's time to risk all. When the opportunity comes, move whether you have the money or not. I was blessed. Another Union treasurer from another Union came to see me. He says, I have a problem, David. You and I are good friends, and I want to get your feedback. We have a trend in our church right now in our Union. People, the giving has decreased. There's a criticism that because we in the administration recently bought new cars, they're saying, well, if you can afford new cars, then we won't give our tithing and offering. Well, that's not our problem here in the States, because everybody can get a new car if they want one. It's not seen as being very different. But in that country where they live, getting a new car, you have to be rich. He said, we didn't do anything wrong, David. We just worked with the budget a little bit, and we realized we advanced a few little helps here and there and the other, and we were able to work out a deal without any dishonesty at all. It was a perfectly thing that fit into policy, and everybody, each of the administrators got a new car. I said, but what's the perception from the brethren? The perception is that you got something that they could not afford and that you're getting it dishonestly. And I said, can you afford to do that? He said, no. Some churches split off with all their tithing and offering as well. It's time for us as leaders to make decisions that tighten our belts. We must be willing to do without, just as our brethren are doing without. It's time to put things on the line. Leandro, a friend of mine, a young pastor in Peru, came to see me, and he said, terrorism and political strife in my district are very, very bad. He said, some of the areas I have to swim across the river at nighttime to minister to the people, and I got to swim back across the river before morning time. He said, I'm really scared for my life. But I tried to encourage him to be cautious and everything, and he wouldn't take no for an answer. He said, God has called me to do this, and I'm going to keep going. Well, he was captured. They took him to trial with two of the brothers. They were going to shoot him because the Red Army there in the interior, the Shining Path, they just kill you if you're a Christian. They were getting ready to execute them, and all of a sudden some of the brethren stood up and said, well, you're going to have to execute all of us too. What do you mean? It's only them we're going to execute. No, they're our leaders. You're going to have to kill all the church here if you're going to kill our pastors. They let him go. He came to see me, and he said, now I have a new problem. He said, I'm in a new district, and they've given me a certain date. If I'm not out by that date, they will kill me. He said, I came to bring my family out to Lima so that they can be here. I'm going back to die. He went back. He held church service there. They never showed up. He encouraged that church to stand strong no matter what. And soon the communist guerrillas came in and they gave an order, all the villages unite, we're going to have a meeting. And they usually give political meetings all day and all night, and it was Sabbath. Pretty soon they heard singing. What singing am I hearing? The leader said. That's the Seventh-day Adventist church there from Pastor Leandro Rios. He taught them to go ahead and have church in spite of us. Go kill them all. So that he got two of his soldiers, ran down there with machine guns to kill everybody. They came running back and said, they're surrounded by guards in white. Let's get out of here. On a subsequent trip, Leandro told me, I had a dream the other night. I was going with a bunch of my young people along the road, and all of a sudden Jesus came toward us. We chatted for a while, and then Jesus said, Leandro, just stay with me. The rest of you can go on. He said, I think I'm going to die now. I said, Leandro, you can't pay attention to that. It's not just that. He said, my kids had another dream too. And they dreamed a rock fell off the mountain and killed me. Leandro, don't pay attention to dreams. About 2 weeks later, as they were traveling with his wife by bus, they were sitting in the front seat. A rock fell off the mountain, came to the window, and smashed his brains out in her lap. He knew it was coming. He told his children it was coming. His twin brother came for the funeral, and it wasn't long, about a year later, that he fell in love with his brother's wife and married. And the children said, Mommy, Mommy, Daddy has come home again. They're identical twins. I admire Leandro. He was a close friend of mine. It's time that we start making decisions that place our life on the line. One of these days, there's going to be a national identity card. If they don't want the Adventist Church proselytizing, they'll simply say no proselytizing or you lose your ID card. What are you going to do? You're going to still preach, or you're going to back off? Right now, you still can. You have full freedom. We are told not to go overseas on mission service right now because it's dangerous. Right now is at least dangerous as it's going to be for the next few years. It's time to go. I was listening to Moody Bible Institute on WMBW in Collegedale the other day, and they were addressing this need, and they were saying, now that dangers have increased around the world, is it a time for missionaries not to go overseas? Absolutely not. It's a time for us to go and double the amount. I'm embarrassed that we've canceled trips, mission trips, because it's now too dangerous. Let us accelerate as times get harder. Let's not slow down, because if we start slowing down every time there's a difficulty, guess what? We're going to be stopping pretty soon. Loss of liberties. Lack of privacy. No insurance. You know it's getting harder and harder to buy insurance? Some countries, you can't even buy insurance for airplanes anymore, completely off. Does that mean we shouldn't have mission aviation in those countries? Absolutely not. Do the best you can to reduce risk, but you can't avoid it. Reduce it to the minimum, but do not sacrifice mission. I have some recommendations this morning. In closing, one is, as a church, let us keep our ears to the ground. Giving is increasing. People are giving of their retirement, they're selling their assets, they're pouring it in God's work. We need to make decisions to be part of it. Volunteerism is increasing. As missionaries, we need to be more interested in doing the work instead of our own benefits. If the people behind are sacrificing, then we should be sacrificing. Evangelism. Our schools need to open training for evangelism. Our young people don't need to be entertained, they need to be put to work. If you want to save the young people, put them on the front lines where the bullets are flying. They're going to come back so dedicated to the mission, come back, they're going to impress and infect other people with that same philosophy. Let's put them to work. Everywhere, every conference needs to have aggressive opportunities for young people to do evangelism for other young people. Use what you have. Quit complaining that we don't have enough. We don't even use what we have. We have so many assets. We have more assets in this country than any other country in the world, basically. So if we ever say we don't have, we're just being hypocritical. Let's use what we have first before it can be multiplied. You got 5 loaves and 2 fishes? Put them in the Lord's work. And then you can have a multiplication. Reflect those changes in the way we work and the way we budget. Put our budgets right on the front line. Start reducing the areas that are not vital to success and putting those budgets into buying hardware for the front lines, whatever those front lines are in your union, your conference. Modify policies to meet the need. Policies are to keep things running smoothly. We need policies. But policies should not be subservient, or should I say, should not dominate the mission. The mission, they should be subservient to the mission. They should be made to speed the mission. If they don't fit, change them. Make technology a big budget item. You want to reach the masses? Put your money where your mouth is. Television, radio, internet, satellite. In the Great Southern Union, we know about Mission Spotlight, don't we? It's time that we be leaders as well in technology to reach. If the division can't do it, okay, let's do it as a union. Let's be the leaders. If the Southern Union can have their own satellite uplink, let's have it. It'll take some sacrifice, but I believe we can do it. Churches should be encouraged to adopt overseas mission projects of their own. A giving church is a growing church. The more they give to overseas mission, the more they get at home. And they grow like crazy. You can't stop them. Teach sacrifice by example. In the way you do things, reduce everything possible in order to make sure that the mission is carried forward. And when you teach by example, it'll catch on like wildfire. And finally, recognize that the Holy Spirit is being poured out right now. The sealing process is being done right now. Very soon the four angels will be completely done with their job and they'll release the winds of strife. They're already releasing them, and the sealing is happening while the angels are holding the winds. When they let go, basically those 144,000, be it literal or symbolic, that's not the issue. There's a group of people God is preparing to finish the work, and it's going to come from our church with the third angel's message. Realize that the sealing is almost done. If we realize that, all of a sudden things take on a different point of view. It's been a privilege being with you. I hope that the stories of what God has done for us, when I'll tell you one last one. When we were in Kentucky studying aviation maintenance, we used to work every weekend at Manchester Memorial Hospital, and I'd work Saturday night, my wife would work Sunday morning while I slept, and I would work Sunday afternoon, and then back to school again for all the week. And Barry Benton, our legal affairs, I was here yesterday with his wife Sandy, they were involved in a mission organization called Christian Flights International. They used to fly to Haiti all the time with medical trips. They asked me to fly their airplane, their twin-engine airplane, down to Haiti with medical teams. I flew down on quite a few occasions, 6 or 7 times, and every time I did that, I had to skip 2 weeks of work. And we wrestled with this. You know, this is what we survive on. How are we going to live? But I made the decision. We made the decision to go ahead and go. It was missionary work. So I took time off from work. I left for 2 weeks. And when I came back, there was no salary for those 2 weeks. And to this day, we don't know where it came from. But every time there was an envelope, and we didn't tell anybody else. Nobody knew this. It was a personal item. There was an unmarked envelope in our post office box with cash, the exact amount, that the work that I missed. We don't know where it came from. Nobody else knew our problem. It was only the Lord. God is able to provide. He has 1,000 ways to provide for our needs, of which we know nothing. If anything is to be accomplished to the purpose, page 134 of Gospel Workers, it must be done at the golden moment. The slightest inclination of the weight in the balance should be seen and should determine the matter at once. Long delays tire the angels. It is even more excusable to make a wrong decision sometimes and to be continually in a wavering position, to be hesitating, sometimes inclined in one direction than another. More perplexity and wretchedness result from thus hesitating and doubting than from sometimes moving too hastily. I have been shown that the most signal victories and most fearful defeats have been on the turn of minutes. God requires promptness of action. Delays, doubting, hesitation, indecision frequently gives the enemy every advantage. We have no time to lose, page 79 of Christian Service. The passage from place to place to spread the truth will soon be hedged in with dangers on the right and on the left. Everything will be placed in the way of the Lord's messenger, so they will not be able to do the work possible that it is for them to do now. We must look our work squarely in the face and advance as fast as possible in aggressive warfare. Everything in the universe calls upon those who know the truth to consecrate themselves unreservedly to the proclamation of the truth that it has been known in the third angel's message. The working of satanic agencies calls upon every Christian to stand in his lot. Our part is not to sit still and weep and wring our hands, but to arise and to work for time and eternity. Do something and do it soon with all thy might. I live by those words. And I hope it's been an encouragement, and I hope your confidence has been increased to take the moment, seize the moment, because we live at the golden moment. May God bless you in this great Southern Union, Pastor Gordon, as you direct the team. May God bless you. Let us work together in unity. Those of each department, those of our supporting organizations, working hand in hand with our lay workers, our children, our youth, to finish the work. And very soon we'll stand together and say, this is our Lord. We waited for him. He's come to save us. God bless you.